Hi. Well, we're glad to be here. And is that, since we're changing time, does that mean Amanda and Eric's last day of single is 23 hours? All right. Well, we're glad to be here. Those of you who will be going to the wedding tomorrow, if I fall out, it isn't because the spirit seized me. It's because something else did. Anyway, I did my son's wedding about 5 years ago, and I was doing just fine. But I told Brandy, I said, "Now, if you're crying, I'm dead." So we got up there and got started, and I'm fine. We're going along. I'm like, "This is going to happen," and I'm doing this, and I look up, she's crying. So about 3 years later, that's what it seems like when you're emotional and trying to get it together. I'm trying to get my emotions together. Probably 20, 30 seconds, I don't know. My son reached up and he grabbed my finger and he says, "Dad," and he kind of snapped me out of it. So I have no clue what's going to happen tomorrow. So anyway, we're glad to have all three of our kids that will be married after tomorrow. And we're very pleased with their selection of mates. I mean, there's those of you who have grown children, those are things you look forward to, and you're always very pleased. And you see your children grow up to be not only good adults and individuals, but God-fearing people. It's very satisfying to see that. So we're very, very pleased. And I hate to say it, but I like Eric. First time I saw him, you know, we had been to the feast together and everything, and first time we really met. And so after the feast, I says, "You know, Eric," he's getting ready to leave after the last great day. I says, "You know, I tried really hard not to like you, but it didn't work." So, because Amanda told me when she was a little girl, she says, she's probably two or three, and she loves me when I do this, by the way. I'll hear this. I said, "You ever going to leave me?" And she goes, she wouldn't say no. She'd shake her head. "You always going to stay with your daddy?" Yeah, shows you what happened there. Okay. Now, that is what it's supposed to be, isn't it? Yeah? They grow up and begin their own lives together. All right, let's get into the sermon then. See, I didn't even get emotional. I'm okay. Right. Stay tuned. All right. What I'd like to do today is talk to you about the journey of Moses out of Egypt, both physically and spiritually, and want to demonstrate to you that that journey actually is reflected in our lives. His journey and our journey really parallel each other in many respects. And so what I'd like to do is take you on a journey. You might say, well, let's get in a time machine. Some of you remember the first time machine movie back in the 60s where the fellow wanted to go back and see the great progress that the human race would make. And in fact, what he found out was it was a terrible future coming up, and things just got worse and worse. But in this case, we're going to get in the time machine and go back in time. And we will be doing checking out the time around Moses, and then we'll jump forward to the first century church. So we're spending a lot of time in Exodus, as you might imagine, then Hebrews and the book of Acts, and a few other places. But we'll be jumping in that time machine to move ahead. One thing I think we need to keep in mind is that God is very, in some respects, detailed and sometimes brutal with his own people that he chooses to be his leaders. And Moses is one of them. He wasn't a perfect individual. Moses had a problem with his temper. So some of you and some of us can identify that. Moses had a problem sometimes with God. Moses was an average human being in some respects, but he grew to be a giant in faith. So when we look at people like Moses and Paul and the other giants that we look at in Scripture, we should not forget that they really were human beings like us. They were human beings like us who grew. Let's keep that in mind as we kind of get in our time machine, and let's go back to Genesis, the 50th chapter. Genesis, the 50th chapter. As you recall the story of Joseph, he came into Egypt. And you know the story there. And now he's an old man. He's about to pass away. And in Genesis, the 50th chapter, as he knows he's about to die, and the children of Israel have now gone into Egypt, and they've been there, he wants to remind them of some important points here. Genesis 50 and verse 24. "And Joseph said to his brethren, 'I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land, to the land of which he swore to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. So God never intended them to stay in Egypt. Sure, you can see the spiritual parallels as we go through here today. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, that God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. Don't leave me here when God delivers the people. Don't leave my bones in Egypt. I want to go back and be buried with my fathers. Because he wanted to be identified with the God of his fathers and not stay in Egypt. And Joseph died being 110 years old and so forth, and they embalmed him, and they put him in a coffin in Egypt. Now, as the centuries would go by, the promises that God would deliver them was known to the people, but I think as you consider, after several hundred years of slavery and being cut off from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, much of the knowledge that Joseph and the first generation and second generation had of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that knowledge began to wane, and eventually, by the time of Moses, that knowledge was largely lost, and we'll demonstrate that. Now, with that in mind, we're going to jump ahead a little bit now in our time machine, and we want to go to Acts, the 7th chapter, around first century, okay? But our time machine's pretty versatile, so we'll go for it. Acts 7 and verse 25. Acts 7 and verse 25. We're going to actually get into the thinking of Moses. When we read this account, you may or may not have thought about it, we're actually getting into his head. We're going to learn some of the thought processes that Moses had, and this is talking about when he killed the Egyptian, and this is, again, before he was really realized God was calling him to a certain degree, but we'll see he had some knowledge. But a lot of things were lacking in his life yet. But anyway, at this point, he was aware of God. He was aware of the promises that Joseph said, I want you to promise me that you bring my bones out. Someday you're going to be delivered. I'm jumping a little bit ahead in his life here. We will see as we go through the sermon here today that Moses knew who he was. That may be, you might be a little surprised to hear that. He knew that he was a Hebrew. And I'll prove that to you as we go through here. It's not like you saw in the movie Charlton Heston and he found out as an adult. No, it's not that way. He knew who he was. And some interesting dynamics would take place as a result. So anyway, he knew who he was, and part of this we'll show you right here. And he made an assumption which was right, and it was wrong. Well, let's read what that assumption was. Verse 25. For he, Moses, supposed... Now remember, he had killed the Egyptian who was abusing an Israelite, and then he came upon the two Israelites, and he said, why are you mistreating each other? And they said, who are you to judge us? So anyway, for he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. What? Moses put together, but he says, but they did not understand. Moses had put together in his mind the uniqueness of his birth, the protection that he had, his upbringing, and we'll go through this, I'll demonstrate to you, he knew who he was, and he made the wrong conclusion, well, actually made the right conclusion at the wrong time. Think for a moment, had he been correct at saying, now God wants me to deliver the children of Israel, and they would bring them out of Egypt at that time, before the 40 years in the wilderness, what kind of leader would Moses have been? He would have been the Pharaoh of Egypt. Sorry, the Pharaoh of Israel. He would have been a Pharaoh of Israel. What model did he have to come from? The only model he knew was raised around that. And was he ready for this? Well, let's back up just a little bit. Here we see sort of a conclusion here in his own thought process. Wait a minute, I killed an Egyptian who was abusing some of my people. We'll see, he says that. And the next day I'm here to help you out, and now you're rejecting me. Don't you know that God has called me to deliver you? It just says that. He supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. He was right, and he was wrong. His timing was wrong. His timing was wrong. Because God had to humble him. God had to get him out of Egypt physically, and God had to get him out of Egypt spiritually, just like he does us. So, let's move ahead just a little bit here. Let's talk a bit about a progression of thought that he went through in his lifetime. We see here that he thought he was the chosen one. Wrong but right, right but wrong. Timing aspect. And we know he had to flee Egypt. You know the story. I haven't got time to go into all of that. Now that he had to flee Egypt, and the years have gone by, his attitude changed. You ever had a bad attitude? I know you never have. Read about it in a book somewhere. You'll learn what a bad attitude is, because none of you have ever had one. I know that. But let's go to Exodus, the third chapter. Look at the change in thought processes from the time that these things would go on. Exodus, the third chapter. He's now 40 years in the wilderness. Remember, he's had to flee because his life was in danger. He had to flee. 40 years out in the wilderness. Something like, well, West Texas is kind of a wilderness, but I'll tell you, this is really a wilderness. Okay. This is really a wilderness. So he's out there for the 40 years. And let's go to Exodus 3. And let's just see a real side of Moses that we've seen, but maybe haven't really focused on. And verse 4. So the Lord saw, that he turned aside to look. God called him in the midst of the bush. This is the fiery bush incident. And said to Moses, Moses. And he said, well, here I am. Because Moses saw the bush. And he said, I'm going to go up there and see what this is all about. And so he went up there. Now God's talking to him. And he said, do not draw near to this place. Take off your sandals from your feet. For the place where you're standing is holy ground. God's presence is there. So therefore it's holy. The same way God's presence is in the Sabbath, therefore it's holy. Moreover, he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Jacob, and the God of Isaac and of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, surely I have seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from the land to a good and large land, a land flowing with milk and honey, in a place of the Canaanites, the Hivites, and the Amorites, all the otherites that live around there. Verse 9. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have seen their oppression which the Egyptians have oppressed them. And now therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh. Huh? 40 years in out here in the desert before I says God wanted me to deliver ancient Israel, and now you're here 40 years later, excuse me. And that's really the argument that he has, an argument with God. Kind of nervy, but had an argument with God. Look at it. Now when you read this account, maybe it'll make a little more sense. At one point, 40 years younger, he was sure that God wanted him to deliver Israel. He knew the circumstances of his birth. He knew, as we'll demonstrate a little bit later, he knew who he was biologically. And he made certain decisions before the events of Acts 7 that we read to you. And he made a real commitment. We'll see later on, he refused to be called the daughter of Pharaoh. Refused. And when he did that, he cut himself off from the royal family. He cut himself off from a lot of power and protection that that power brings. It was a deliberate choice. And then he tried to save Israel, and they rejected him. Now he's 40 years later, and God says, I'm sending you. And he says, excuse me, here's my driver's license, my social security number. You got the wrong guy. You know, most of the servants that God chooses in these big jobs, they're the ones that come kicking and screaming. They don't want it. And Moses, now, well, that's good, because now Moses will be humbled and be ready to be the kind of servant instead of being a Pharaoh of Israel. You don't want to be a Pharaoh of Israel. We would have learned the wrong lessons. Anyway, now let's see, where was I? Verse 10. Now come, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? What a difference from, don't you know that God's supposed to use me to deliver you? Now it's, nope. And that I should bring the children out of Egypt. Who are you? What? See, he didn't want that. So he said, I will certainly be with you. And this is what God's reply. And this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Oh, that's when I know you've really called me? After we leave and we're getting back here? That really, he kind of goes, that's not real. It's like saying, you'll know that you're supposed to, I don't know, what's it, something equivalent to it. Well, you'll know you're supposed to be on the first moon landing on the moon when you get back safely. Then you'll know it's me doing it. I mean, it's about the same kind of thing going on here. So, verse 13, and Moses said to God, indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, kind of like I did before, 40 years earlier. Okay? The God of your fathers who sent me to you, and they shall say, what's his name? See, that's how little they knew about the God of their fathers now. And it's how little Moses knew. Much of the knowledge of the God of their fathers was now gone. Just little remnants was passed. And something about this God of the fathers would bring them out. We're supposed to bring Joseph's bones with us. That was probably one of the only connections they really had with their forefathers. He says, well, they want to know what your name is. What's your name? What shall I say to them? And God said, I am who I am. And he says, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Well, moreover, the God of Moses, moreover, God said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, always identifying, going back to the God of the fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord God of your fathers is so forth gone on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob appeared to me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen what is done in Egypt. And I have said, I will bring you out of the land of affliction, of the land of Egypt, the Canaanites, and so forth. I'm trying to move here for time's sake. And so he did. And at first, the elders that he came to talk to, they said, great, let's go. Then you know the story. Moses went, and again, Moses didn't really want this. Remember, he says, and for time's sake, I think he may have been a stutterer. We don't know that for sure, but he says, I don't speak real well. You don't want me for this job. Let's just go to chapter 4, for instance, chapter 4, verse 1. Moses answered and said, suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Why would that be in something in his mind? They didn't believe him the last time he was there. And I think it's fair to say, just being human, as we'll see in just a little bit, I'm having to do this a little bit out of order to make certain points. When he gave up his role as a refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, he gave up everything. See? He gave up everything. And they rejected him. And I can't help but believe, just being human, he resented that. You know, he got this assignment out in Egypt. He resented. I gave it all up for these guys, and they rejected me. We'll see that. They did reject him, and he knew it. And he says, and now, 40 years later, you want me to go back? What's your name? Now I'm not a very good speaker. Find somebody else. And he wasn't very respectful towards God in some respects. I don't think, as you read through the account, he was hurt. You ever been hurt? So Moses is somebody you and I can identify with. He's not just this mystical giant out there in history. And boy, he just did everything great. No, he didn't. But as he went through his life, he repented and he changed and he grew and he came out of this journey. You see, he's on his journey spiritually now out of Egypt. He made the physical journey in a few weeks to get out. But then it took a long time to get the spiritual out of him and put in the right. Spiritual. And here he's kind of dealing with it, is this inner struggle. Verse 1, but suppose they will not believe or listen to my voice. And I'll put in parentheses, just as last time. Suppose they say the Lord has not appeared to you. So it's not totally unrealistic to think that. The Lord has not appeared unto you. So the Lord said to him, what is that in your right hand? The rod, you know about that rod. And so they did the rod aspect of it. Now let's go to verse 10. And Moses said to the Lord, "O my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech." Well, a stutterer, who knows? But there's another excuse. You know, if you stutter, I'm not making fun of you. I'm just trying to show you. He doesn't want it. Why go back for more abuse? See? Just, again, you can go through all these verses here. Verse 11, so the Lord said to him, "Who's made a man's mouth?" Now God's getting a little irritated. "Or who makes the mute, the deaf, see, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say." But he said, "O Lord, please send by the hand of whoever else you make." I don't want it. Send somebody else. In fact, I got a couple names and here's a list. You see, he didn't want it. He went from this progression of believing he had been called to deliver Israel out of Egypt, which he was correct, but his timing was way off, to where now he'd come out, and when God says, "Yeah, you are the one I've chosen," he said, "I don't want it. Don't want it." I think it's very clear he did not want it. What happened to Moses then? We'll move on here. Well, he was born in humble circumstances, a slave, a son of a slave, very little hope that he'd ever get out of that predicament. And yet, as we know the events of his life, this goes to Exodus, the second chapter now. We'll jump back here to Exodus 2nd, pick up some other areas of thought. Exodus, the second chapter. Chapter 2, verse 1, and a man of the house of Levi went and took a wife and daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, or a comely child, somehow they sensed this is a special kid. Now again, if you're a parent or a grandparent, you know your grandchildren or your children are the most beautiful in the whole world. I don't know about the grandparent thing, I'm not there yet, but everybody knows their kids are the smartest. You know, bring home a child 3 days old, "Look, he's brilliant." No, but somehow these parents knew he was special. Because God was working here. God was working here. All right, now, let's move on. They hid him for 3 months, and they would nurse children a lot longer than those days than they do now. And when they could no longer hide him, they took an ark of brushes and for him, dabbed it with asphalt, in other words, make it waterproof, and pitch, and put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the riverbank. Now, just real quickly, let me say this. She didn't just go down, there's hundreds of miles of river, and just stick it in the river, and voila, it ends up with Pharaoh's daughter picking it out of the water. No, it was very carefully, this was very carefully planned. And for time's sake, I'm not going to turn there, but Acts 7:21 give you some more detail. Let me just read to you from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, a commentary that gives some very interesting information. What would happen is the Nile was worshipped, and later on, during Moses did come back. Remember, one of the things is turn the Nile into blood. These various judgments that came against Egypt were always judgments against the various things that the Egyptians would worship: the Nile, the firstborn, and these different things. And so it was God saying, "See, the most powerful nation on earth at the time, and all their deities, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they are at my whim." And he just destroyed all of this. Well, and here's what it says in Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary on it, and I think it gives you some interesting information and background. Remember, Pharaoh's daughter came down to the Nile? Now, do you think this thing is full of crocodiles? You think the royal family would send for religious, they would go down to these various, to the river for religious services? Would they go down just where the crocodiles are and hope for your best? It was kind of an act of faith to go down there? No. They fenced off certain areas by the temples where they did their services. And Moses was placed in that basket right within one of those protected areas. They knew. Mom had this plan. The only way I can save him is to put him right in the royal household. Let me read to you. The occasion where Moses' daughter came down, and it actually was a religious service, is thought to have been a religious solemnity which the royal family opened by bathing in the sacred stream. See, it was considered sacred, the Nile. Particular sacredness was attached to those portions of the Nile which flowed near the temples. The water was there fenced off as protection from the crocodiles, and doubtless the princess had an enclosure reserved for her use, the road of which seems to have been well known to Moses' mother. So it wasn't just like in the movie. He just cast out there and kind of drifted out there, very deliberately done. And sure enough, Moses' daughter was also called the daughter of God, because Pharaoh was worshipped. And the daughter of God went to do a service. The daughter of God went out to at the Nile by a temple, and she says, "Look, the gods of the Nile has given me Moses, and I've drawn him out." And so God worked here. God worked here. Exodus 2, verse 10. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me." Isn't it interesting? The next couple verses just above that, who's going to nurse this child of verse 7? And it just so happens that this little Hebrew girl happens to be right along and says, "Hey, my mom's nursing some kids." You think Pharaoh's daughter kind of put one and one together? So, okay, you take him, she can nurse him, and then when he's of age, bring him to me. And it was at that time, and I'll demonstrate because time's getting away from me, at that time, Moses was taught by his mother and his father who he was. But then he had to be delivered back to Pharaoh's household. And Moses was beginning to put this together, but as we said, his timing wasn't always right. All right, so let's move ahead here. Let's go to Acts 7. Acts 7. I like, when I read the scriptures, I try to say, you know, these are godly men and women, but you know what? They were pretty much a lot like us. They really were. The only one that wasn't was Christ. But the rest of them, in many respects, they're like us. And it's taking the imperfections and God perfecting us that it shows you what God can do through and with individuals, despite ourselves. Acts 7, verse 21. But when he was set out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him up as her own. So this is when after he was being done nursing. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in word and deed. Because he was now part of the royal household, he could either, perhaps, some debate, he could have perhaps been in line for Pharaoh, but definitely he could have been in line to be part of the Parthenon of deities. Had all kinds of deities, and he had that, because after all, was he not drawn out of the sacred river by the daughter of God, the Pharaoh, daughter's Pharaoh? That's that right? Pharaoh's daughter? Get these big words. Okay. See, in Texas, if you forget, you just have fixing to get that right. So. Anyway, and so he was in the driver's seat here in one respect. Anyway, now when he was 40 years old, verse 23, it came to his heart to visit his brethren. Now you say, well, yeah, that's how he turned out that he found out his brethren. Let's read it again. He came to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. After seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed and struck down the Egyptian. Now, I come back to what I've read to you already before. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand, but they did not understand. He knew, again, we'll come back and show you that he didn't know who he was, as far as biologically. And the next day he appeared, two men, one of them as they were fighting, and he tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you're brethren, why do you wrong one another?" But he who did his brother wrong, it kind of fits here, wouldn't it? Very much what you see, the guy who's in the wrong, pushed him away saying, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? What do you intend to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?" Then at this, Moses fled because became a dweller in the land of Midian, where he had two sons. Could have wrapped that up. What is that? What's the significance of what that one Israelite said? Look at verse, we'll start here. Verse 33. Then the Lord said to him, take your sandals off. Remember we read that? We're referring back to the time of Exodus. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place you're standing is holy ground. For surely I've seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I've heard their groaning, and I've come down to deliver them. And now come, and I'll send you to Egypt. And then we're hoping to fill in these gaps. He says, you don't want me. I don't speak well. You got the wrong social security number. My driver's license is, I'm not the guy you want. Go get somebody else. Remember, he did that. And he went from this one, God has called me to do this, to where I don't want it. And if I have to argue with you, Lord, I'm going to argue with you. Finally, you know the story. So, let's get back to verse 35. This Moses, whom they rejected, when did they, who's they? Israel. This Moses, who they, Israel, rejected, saying, when that one man spoke, Moses knew he was speaking. God gave him an understanding. This one man is speaking, but it means more than that. It means the people have rejected me. Saying, who made you ruler and judge is the God who sent to be ruler and deliverer by the hand of the angel who appeared, see, in the bush. It says right there, he knew when he heard that, who made you ruler over us, that he was being rejected. And he got out. See, he got out of Egypt. And now, let me just read a little bit here from some other material. Let's go to Hebrews 11. Hebrews, the 11th chapter. When you read these accounts, you've got to try and go to your concordance, or if you have it on the computer, type in Moses and read it all. Look them all up. Get the verses and start plugging it in, and you'll see a very human, dynamic approach that God has here. And this man Moses was on a journey. Physically, he left Egypt just a matter of a few days. But he was on this journey for 40 years to come out of Egypt. And even when he, after he was served God for many years of working with Israel and the like, that old problem he had of his temper, remember that one? I always call him the guy with the flat nose. Because remember, the Israelites wanted to kill him over and over. They wanted to stone him. So he'd fall flat on his face. I said, that's why he has a flat nose, because he's always on his face. And said, Lord, don't hold us against them. And then pretty soon he would get exasperated. And he says, Lord, did I conceive all these folks? Why are you slaving me with all of these folks? He got exasperated. Remember about give us water? What do I have to do? Do I have to strike the rock to get water out? And he lost his temper again. The man had a temper problem. They psychoanalyze it, don't need to do that. But why did he have a temper problem? Well, they're constantly writing him. No matter what God does, it's never enough. But that's another whole sermon there. It's never enough. So finally he just said, all right, so he hits the rock. Well, God honors that. You know the story. But he says, because of that, you did not give me the honor. You don't go over to the promised land. You can see it from afar, but you're not going to go over. See, he was human. And he lost it at that point. You know, he lost his temper at that point. Well, I tell you what, though, you know, sometimes, as I think Mr. Trebig says the same thing, did we conceive these people? You know, sometimes if you're having a bad week, most of the time you don't feel that way, but sometimes you do. Did we conceive these people, Lord? Okay, well, so I think every pastor knows that story. See, I'm visiting, I'll be gone, he can pick up. You feel that way about me? Oh, no. So anyway, let's move on here. Where was I? Hebrews 11, verse 24. Again, you got to read all of the context. For Christ, Hebrews 11, 24. There we go. Hebrews 11 is a sort of a brief overview of the people of giant faith. Verse 23, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. We saw that, because he saw that he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. They were going to act in disobedience to the king's command, because the king was wrong, and they saw this child was something God wanted. By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused. He knew who he was. This is the deliberate wording here. Now look at it. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. A deliberate action. No, I will not choose to remain in the royal household. I refuse to do that. Choosing, very deliberate word again. He refused and he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. He made a choice to cut himself off from the royal family, all the protection and all the power and all the wealth that that would have. He stepped out and he defended the Israelites. He had killed the Egyptian. Then he defended the Israelites. And they said, "Who made you ruler over us?" And then it says he feared. In that case, he feared because he was afraid. My people have rejected me. And I've cut myself off from the royalty of Egypt. I got to get out of here. And then he went off 40 years in the desert and stewed over this. Don't tell me he didn't just forget about it. He stewed over this. Then he saw the burning bush 40 years later. Okay, now you can go back. No way. Doesn't that sound like a human way that he would approach that? Isn't that a way you and I would? A huge disappointment in your life. The thing was, you mistimed it. You mistimed it. Have we mistimed things? Well, all of us have. So here's a very human man that God would use in a mighty way, but had to humble him, had to bring him down, and get him to prepare to do the task, until finally Moses was, as they call him, one of the meekest men next to Christ that there was. Very teachable. But he didn't get there overnight. He didn't get there overnight. He was on his journey out of Egypt. Now look at this verse 26 here. He esteemed, and he made a deliberate choice, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater than the riches of the treasures in Egypt. He looked to the reward. By faith, he forsook Egypt. Now he was coming out spiritually. He forsook. This was just the beginning of it, though, for him. He forsook Egypt, not fearing the king. Now, before it said he left Egypt fearing. He didn't fear Pharaoh. He feared his people had rejected him and he had no support anymore and he had to leave. So this, you see, is beginning to come out. He forsook Egypt physically. And then 40 years later, he was called to do the work. And now I think as you recount those events in his life at the burning bush, I hope it makes more sense to you why he said, "Why me? Where were you 40 years ago?" And God said, "You weren't ready yet." What would happen if Israel had a Pharaoh? In the kingdom of God, I don't know about you, I've been in church almost 40 years. I would have liked to have seen the kingdom of God come, let's say, 39 years, 8 months ago. Okay? But would we have been ready? Because God does not want Pharaohs to lead in the world tomorrow. He wants truly converted, humble people who won't abuse people, who will love them and treat them well. And see, when we've had to learn those painful lessons over the years, have we learned them all? No. Still learning. Still learning. He doesn't want pharaohs. He doesn't want somebody who says, "Boy, I could just hardly wait for the Christ to come back because I'm going to start knocking some heads." And, you know, I've heard that. Probably every minister has. I said, "Well, God won't let..." He's not going to give you that kind of authority. See? He doesn't want that. So anyway, just to show you this whole evolution, if you will, that took place in his life. He chose to come out of Egypt, and he did. And it was a whole process that even he didn't understand. He didn't really understand it until it was all put together. But it was during this time of the 40 years in the wilderness, and then as he came back, as he came back into Egypt, some interesting things begin to take place. For example, when he first came back for time check, I'll just refer you to it. He went to the elders and they said, yes, I think it's Exodus 4. Let's go there real quickly. Exodus 4. Yes, the last part of, it's in verse 31 of Exodus 4. Remember, God says, you're going to go and you talk to the elders and they're going to believe you. And he's trying to get Moses to agree to go back, you know. So he says, so he does. And so the people believed. He talked to the elders when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked on their affliction. And they bowed their heads and worshipped. Oh, thank God, we're going to be delivered. Then in chapter 5, they go to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, no, I'm not going to let the people go. And once more, you have to keep the same number of bricks being made, and I'm not going to supply any materials. Well, now, things went from bad to worse here in verse 22 of chapter 5. And you kind of see this old resentment coming back into Moses. Moses was a man, just like us. See? So Moses returned to the Lord. Things didn't work out. Oh, things are worse now. He and the elders said, we were better off before you came back here with your story about the God out there in the wilderness, and he's going to deliver us. We jumped in and we agreed to that, and now here we are. I have to make the bricks and not provide the material. We have to keep the same quota. Thanks a lot, bud. That's sort of the loose West Texas paraphrase. Now, verse 22. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? He wasn't there yet, but he was growing. Why is it that you have sent me? Didn't I tell you? And yeah, sure enough, if it can go bad, it will. Don't worry. For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all. Where's the promise? And don't make me have to go through this again where they rejected me 40 years ago. Now you told me to come back, and here it is. We've gone from bad to worse. Where's the promise? You ever felt that way? And yet God says, wait. It'll happen when it's time to happen. Remember this and in the various things that you know happen. God has a time when he works in our lives. And as we go through the spring holy days, we're reminded of what God is doing in our lives, collectively and individually. And you know, he's commanded that we keep the holy days so we get to know him better. And really, as Moses went, as he was instructed about the Passover and the night to be much observed, and then they started keeping the days of unleavened bread and these different things, he began to learn more about God with the people. His journey is our journey. And our journey is his journey. God brings us out and he's teaching us. He's preparing future rulers, as you know. Not pharaohs. Future rulers who will rule with God's people and the people of the world when Christ comes back with love and mercy and compassion. Sometimes we have to learn that the hard way, don't we? We learn by our mistakes. Didn't Moses? Remember my first pastorate. I don't think anybody might. I won't say any names. I guess, you know, your first time you're feeling all the pressure and strain and I kind of snapped at this kid, and I shouldn't have snapped at him. So I went back and I apologized to he and his father. And that, so what, did I learn anything from that? Yeah. You don't do that one again, dummy. Okay. And so you really learn, boy, you got to be careful what comes out of your mouth so you don't unnecessarily hurt. Well, you know what, that kind of solidified it between us. At least come and say, hey, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done it that way. Should have done it another way or whatever. So, but you learn. You learn from your mistakes, don't you? If you don't, what is it? The old saying is, one thing worse than a young fool, and that's an old one, who never learns. But that's not what God has. God is here to teach us, and he wants us to be true leaders, and he's preparing us for that. And we learn by our mistakes, and we learn by our successes. But God brings us through. And at times we'd say, I wish the kingdom would come now, but it's not time. We're not ready yet. The world's not ready yet. But when it is, all these things will start coming together in a package, and we'll start seeing what God is doing. The first, what God wants to do is solidify relationships with us, individually and collectively. He wants us to have a relationship with him, just as with Moses. Part of that journey out of Egypt is to have a relationship with God. Not just believe doctrine. That's important. But if all we are doctrinal machines, we're Pharisees. But we have to have a relationship with Jesus Christ and God the Father. And without that, then we don't have the love of God shed abroad in our hearts. We're great Pharisees, but we're not what God wants us to be. And again, to have the right kind of leaders. So I hope that you see Moses as more of a human, but also as a man that we can identify with, who had his weaknesses and his strengths, and he learned and he grew from his experiences. And we can as well. So I hope that you have a better view of that. I thank Mr. Trey Big for turning me loose on you. He'll take care of whatever damage I've done. And we look forward to the wedding tomorrow, and we really appreciate getting to say hello to all of you and get to see you. and hopefully get to do it again in the future.